Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have a very special Soapbox. I realize I say that almost every week, but almost every week we have a very special Soapbox. Today our guest is Gail McLaughlin. Gail is a California politician. She's a member of the Green Party. And from 2006 to 2014, she was the mayor of Richmond, California. And in 2014, she termed out and was elected to the city council. And well, while she was mayor, she was mayor of the largest city with a Green Party mayor at the helm. And she's also a social activist who has participated in the peace, social justice, civil rights, and environmental movements. And Gail and I have crossed paths many times with these movements. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Gail McLaughlin. Gail McLaughlin, thank you, and welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you for inviting me, Cindy. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, you're a political superstar in the left-wing political venues, but you're not just a politician. You're an activist, and you've been active in so many worthwhile causes your whole life, and I'm just very excited to finally have you on the show, and I just feel a little bit deficient because I haven't had you on before.
Oh, well, listen, you know, I'm just so pleased to be connected with you, as we have been in the past through some of your electoral work and your activist work. So it's I feel like I've been connected with you all along, so to have a formal or have an interview with your show here is, you know, really an honor for me as well.
Well, thank you so much. One of the things we've worked on together, which has been an enormous victory for us in the movement, is Free the Cuban Five. And recently, they were released back to Cuba. Can you talk a little bit about that before we get into your political work there in Richmond?
Sure, yes. The Freedom for the Cuban Five has been a big interest and cause for me along the recent years that, you know, finally, thankfully, led up to the president's recent work with the Cubans to allow all of the five to go home. So, I've been in touch for several years, I think going back to around 2008 or 7 even, with the International Committee for Freedom of the Five. And I've done various things like organize some mayors in California, 13 mayors, and I wrote a letter to the Attorney General at the time to ask for visitation rights for the wives of the five and the family of the five, because some of them were not getting allowed visitation rights. So I did that, and without success, sadly, but it showed that mayors in California could come together and make a human rights statement here. Then I also brought forward a resolution to the Richmond City Council, which was passed unanimously in favor of freedom for the five and the visitation rights, and, you know, a whole new case that gave them a fair trial. So I tried to work to bring this cause into the consciousness locally here. And then, of course, I went to Cuba in 2013. We have a sister city relationship with Regla, Cuba. So I had that opportunity to visit Cuba, and at that time Renee was already free, one of the Cuban Five, and had a chance to meet him and his wife and all the other family members. And saw just the love that the Cubans have for their heroes, the Cuban Five, billboards all over the island, saying, they want all their heroes home. And so that was in December of 2013. And then it was the next year that the arrangement was made so that all five were home. And so I was very, very pleased to play a small part in that overall campaign to really raise consciousness and to see how unjust it was to have these five Cubans who were just trying to work to prevent terrorism of their country. Right. They came into this country, as you know, to bring forward and find out information about exile groups that were really wreaking havoc on the island. And our country did the wrong thing and imprisoned them. So that was kind of my role or my little part in that. But of course, during the recent campaigns in Richmond, local campaign in 2014, right, they played up my small role to help what I could do with the Cuban Five. I also went to Washington, D.C. With a group to try and lobby various members of Congress. They tried to play it up like, I was this person who was, dialoguing and advancing a cause with terrorists. And so it was, it was a terrible misinformation campaign. And on so many levels, Chevron paid for attacks on me, but the Cuban Five, kind of angle here was something that they added to their mix of attacks. But it was not long after the November 2014 campaign, which we won, that President Obama freed all the five. And so it was kind of a vindication so that the public saw through all this in Richmond. Then with Obama doing what he did, it was like even those who were maybe convinced wrongly about these five men saw things in a new light, I think.
Well, and to be fair, it was a prisoner exchange, really. And most of the media focused on the prisoners that Alan Gross and I forget the name of the other person who were actually doing mischief in Cuba when the Cuban Five were, and Cuba was very upfront about the intelligence that the Cuban Five gathered, which was probably their downfall. And so anyway, let's go past the Cuban Five because, like I said, you are a superstar of left-wing political circles, but for a very good reason. You've been able to overcome these. You and your recent coalition for the 2014 elections able to show that money doesn't always triumph.
Yes. Yes, that's true. We, with a lot of hard work, organizing and determination and fight back, which actually didn't just drop from the sky this particular election, or didn't just result as a result of many, many hardworking volunteers this electoral season, but it had 10 years, a decade of progress, a decade of fight back, a decade of organizing that led up to this victory in 2014, that we overcame more than $3 million of Chevron corporate money. We have the Chevron Richmond refinery in our city, which is, the most productive oil refinery in California. And they really, pulled out all the stops to try and stop the progressive movement and all the changes we had made and all the, you know, organized efforts that we have put together. But they failed, you know, in spite of their attacks, in spite of the fact that they bought up every billboard in town practically, and sent mailers, glossy mailers, to people's mailboxes, like three or four of them every day in the last few months before the election. And they had ads on TV and the internet and the radio, voice chat messages. They even had what they call their a newspaper, but it's really a it's an online propaganda source. Mm-hmm. So everything they did was to try and stop us with lies, malicious lies, and misinformation. And so we went door to door. We went to every community event, as I always did as mayor. Having spent 8 years as mayor, I ran as a city council member because I termed out as mayor and couldn't run for a third term. So myself and two other Richmond Progressive Alliance candidates ran as a team. We called ourselves Team Richmond. None of us took corporate donations. We were outspent 20 to 1, and we overcame that $3 million plus of Chevron money just with our grassroots organizing.
Well, Gail, does that analyze that, and let's catch the listeners up to speed. I think we jumped way forward.
Okay.
You did win as mayor of Richmond in 2006.
Right.
You were on the city council, I believe, for a couple years before that. You challenged an incumbent,
right,
and you won. And so, like you said, 8 years you termed out, and you ran for city council, and you won for city council. Is Mayor of Richmond a partisan seat?
No, it's not. It's nonpartisan. So I ran, you know, you don't declare,
right,
your, but it was always known that,
right,
I was a member of the Green Party.
Right.
But I, tried, to be very broad in, you know, how I look at the issues in Richmond. And, you know, I think people recognize that about me. It's my values that they saw and not so much looked at me as a Green, although a lot of people were glad that they had someone from the registered Green as their candidate, as their mayor, and now again as their council member. But the Richmond Progressive Alliance is the organization I'm more active in than the Green Party. And the RPA, is how we are known, is an alliance of people from different political affiliations. Because this is a nonpartisan race, the city council races, the mayoral race, you know, we came together in Richmond. We're Greens, we're Peace and Freedom members, we're some are progressive Democrats, a lot are declined to state.
Right.
People came together based on their values to make change locally. And so we didn't focus on party, we focused instead on local issues and our values. But one thing we made sure in the RPA is that anyone who wanted to be endorsed by the RPA or be come in, you know, in a very strong and central way involved with us, has to stand for no corporate money in local elections, and all candidates cannot take a penny of corporate money. So even if they're progressive Democrats, they take that vow. And we had, you know, three RPA candidates win. None of us took a penny of corporate money. I'm a Green. The other two are progressive Democrats, but they share my values. You know, we kind of come together as a force to overcome corporate money in elections and to make the people's priorities the focus of our time in office.
I always, when I run for office, I always say I don't take corporate money, and I've actually never been offered any. So, you know, but when I was running against Pelosi, I did have an intermediary come to my office and offer me $30,000 from Tom DeLay's PAC. And I was like, Tom DeLay hates me. Why would he be offering money? And his intermediary said, because he hates Pelosi more.
Uh-huh.
And so I did turn down that money. I just thought it was very tainted money, and we needed it, of course. You know how running a campaign is, but when I ran against Pelosi in 2008, I moved to San Francisco, and Richmond is very close to San Francisco, of course, and we had in San Francisco, we had at least one green on the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. We had a green that was, I think she was the superintendent of schools. And there were very prominent greens like Matt Gonzalez, who almost beat Gavin Newsom. And then it seemed like it was a very powerful local movement, but then it sort of collapsed when these people turn out and they become Democrats because they feel like they can't go any further. And you say that, you know, your alliance is based on values, but, is that retaining values if you switch political parties just so easily for your political advancement?
Well, my view on the whole two-party system is that we have to organize outside of the two-party system completely. I mean, I have no illusions that the Democratic Party is leading people into a dead-end road and has been doing so time and time again. So I think what the nonpartisan races strategy has to offer is to focus away from partisan politics and onto, I mean, you're very close to the community on a daily basis when you're running for a local office in a city, and when you're an elected official, you know, you're right there on the streets with people. You're not, you know, on a like a state or a federal level mm-hmm. where you're a little removed, maybe still very hopefully involved those who have principles with a movement, which we don't have too many in those offices, but like yourself, for example, and your campaigns, had you won, would have been a great breakthrough because of your grassroots politics. But it's my view about state and federal elections, they are partisan elections, and I do not support the partisan candidate, I mean the Democratic or Republicans. I either support a Green or a Peace or Freedom person. Right. So I do believe in the importance of separating oneself from the two-party system. I don't think Matt Gonzalez became a Democrat, by the way. I think he...
No, Matt didn't.
Yeah, but he is not... Right. running in political office anymore, but he did do a remarkable thing when he nearly won the mayoral race in San Francisco. So we had been gaining so much momentum, and it does seem to have, you know, in terms of a Bay Area movement of, you know, Greens, seems to have slowed down. But there are other parties, the Peace and Freedom Party, there was the Justice Party for a little while. I'm of the belief that we should all come together, you know, those of us who believe in organizing outside of the two-party system, and perhaps create a third party, you know, and bring in, you know, get those progressive Democrats that are really unhappy with the way their party is operating, and get them to join something new, you know, relinquish their registration with the Democrats and register with something new. I mean, that's my vision for the future, and I realize it would take, you know, it takes a while to get there. But I definitely am someone who sees the Democrats as a dead-end road.
Well, oh, shit, I forgot what I was going to say. Well, of course, yeah, I totally agree. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I think that most Democrats, if they really, you know, most people register at a political party, but they're not really that political. Right. You know, they register based on what their parents' affiliation was or whatever. And I think most people who actually think about it, they would agree almost 100% with our vision, what we believe in, mm-hmm. right? And but then when push comes to shove and they get in the voting booth, you know, they just fill in the bubble for their political party. Because most of it, I think, is fear-based voting.
I agree.
But you have a situation, you know, in Richmond where you have overcome corporate money. You have made some huge victories and some huge strides towards humane governance. And do you think that, and you did talk about this a little bit in one of your answers, do you think that these political alliances would be better off being organized locally, and then, you know, grassroots means it spreads horizontally, and then, you know, if it spread enough horizontally, the only way to go would be up.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think organizing along, you know, these alliances locally would be more effective for us? It's a long-term strategy, that's for sure.
Right. Well, I definitely think so. I think, in terms of people perhaps learning from what we have done in Richmond on a local level, I'm invited to so many speaking engagements where people want to know how we did it in Richmond, and I share with them, mm-hmm. you know, how we came together and our grassroots work over the past decade, and I see them as seeing us as a bright light in a really dark political landscape right now nationally. Mm-hmm. So I think and we know in Richmond that we can't remain an island. We can't remain, you know, one, you know, city that's made all this progress, because, you know, the corporate entities around us are so powerful. When other cities move similarly, we get strengthened as well. Right. So we definitely are seeing that, you know, many cities, many communities coming together to define our own destiny as an approach for the future. I'm, in fact, writing a book about the past 10 years, and hopefully it will serve as a grassroots tool for others. But we also know that Citizens United is out there, and that's something that, you know, is a curse on all of us. So we know there's a lot of fight back needed on a local level. But in terms of, do I think that's that horizontal strategy is the only strategy we should apply? I would say no, because I also think people, independent left, candidates should run for federal and state offices, whenever they can, and if they have that determination, I support that, because I think it does get, we should just make use of every opportunity we can to make it clear that there's another way.
Well, unfortunately, here in California, for state and federal offices, except for president, top two has pretty much screwed us over. Gail, when I ran for governor in 2014, that was like the worst experience. It was just so, apparent that it was, it was passed and it's in place to keep our voices out of the political system. And so it makes it, people are saying, oh, Barbara Boxer's retiring, you should run for Senate. Like, not in a million years, because it's just like there's going to be a whole bunch of people running, and it's going to be ridiculous. And so, and every effort we've made, because the Greens, the Libertarians, Peace and Freedom Party, and other people have been working together to try to overturn the top two system here in California in the courts, and we've been consistently thwarted. We have had some victories in the state legislature to kind of ameliorate it a little bit so we can stay political parties, but the Peace and Freedom Party is honestly having discussions on, is electoral strategy state and federal, is that a good place to put our resources?
Mm. Well, you know, you're absolutely right. In California, the situation we're in is just so, so horrid. So so disappointing, and I appreciate all those who have been fighting back on that to try and overturn this top two scenario. And you know, I know it's a horrendously difficult work to do. But I do think that we shouldn't eliminate the options of electoral work. I do think that that could eventually be overturned, and I do think that we need to have an electoral wing of mass movements. Now, if you don't have a mass movement, your time in office is really going to be pretty much of a loner type experience. You won't be advancing us all like we all need to be advanced. We need to have that mass movement. And so I think when somebody steps forward, that helps galvanize the movement. And of course, when movements form, as they often do, and so many are forming right now in the U.S., the idea of putting forward a candidate from the ranks of the movement helps build that that reciprocity relationship of the electoral realm of a candidate who can't be bought off, and hopefully a elected official who then, you know, remains in that role as an elected official who cannot be bought off, and a movement that's working in reciprocity with one another. So I do not think that that should be abandoned, electoral realm, but I do understand the particular challenges in California for state races, and I don't know how it works for federal.
It's the same except for president. President's the only office that really we have an option to go to the November. Everybody can run in the open primaries, of course, but the only way that we can stay have candidates for November really realistically is in the presidential election. But then that goes, we can't really expect to have a one state presidential campaign to build party and build alliances, which is so good in Richmond that you guys are able to do that. So tell me, we don't have a lot of time left. This has been a great interview. What do you think was your greatest accomplishment as mayor? And of course, this is still an ongoing story because you're still there working really hard to, to lead us in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Yes, there were so many collective accomplishments that we made and that we have made and more to make. I would say our battle with Chevron is the biggest accomplishment because we used to be a company town and we have shown ourselves to be a progressive town now. In fact, in the last elections, like I said, all the progressives won. Not only did Team Richmond win, but there were some two moderate progressives running, and they won. All of Chevron candidates lost. Mm-hmm. So we've moved in that progressive direction further. We've done things like got fair taxation from Chevron, $114 million in a tax settlement. That's an additional taxes. We have reduced pollution. We've put regulations on them and conditions on them in terms of how they operate their refinery. We had a horrendous fire in 2012, right, and we're suing Chevron because of that fire. That's the first time in the history of Richmond that the city council has stepped up to sue this oil giant in our city. So the battle with Chevron has been a big one. Also, we defeated a casino. Some groups were organizing, a smaller group in the community, and the city council, before I was on board, before I was a city council member, were trying to bring forward a casino to supposedly help with the economy of Richmond. Many of us knew that that was not the way to build an economy and preying on poor people and, all the crime and traffic it would bring. So we defeated the casino option. It took us something like 5 years to do so. We stood up to Wall Street. We still are with the foreclosure prevention programs that we have in place. And environmentally, we've made great, great strides. We became number one in the Bay Area for solar installed per capita. We just have all kinds of leading environmental and health initiatives in the city. And we're very, very proud to be showing that progressives, when united, can overcome challenges, that I think for years people kind of threw up their hands and said, why fight City Hall, you know? Well, now City Hall is standing up for its citizens in Richmond, its residents. We've done immigration rights, a municipal ID. We stand up for all sectors of our community. And it's been a joy. It's been hard work, but it's really made a big difference, and I'm proud to have been part of it and still be part of it.
Well, Gail, one more thing. In the climate we have now with rising police violence and police on brown and black murder, Richmond also has kind of reversed that trend.
Absolutely, and thank you. I usually bring that up as a first first accomplishment. We have reduced our violence significantly, 75% reduction in homicides since I became mayor in 2006 to the present day. That is like the lowest homicide number, you know, in 40 years or something like that. All our crime has went down. We have a community-involved police force. We have prevention programs. We've made addressing the roots of our violence the core focus, rather than trying to stamp out crime, knowing that you can't do that. You have to provide the opportunities and the guidance that really is at the root cause of violence in cities, and spend the money to really help those most in need. So that's something that, you know, we are very firm on, and want to keep reducing our violence, keep reducing our crime, showing that an urban community, can transform itself from the history of injustices that Richmond used to have in its bank of experience.
You hired a really interesting police chief, yes, from Fargo, North Dakota, and he actually stood with people with a sign that said Black Lives Matter. And to me, that I don't have a lot of confidence in police anymore, but that to me showed a lot of integrity and a lot of humanity from really someplace that we don't expect it anymore.
Absolutely. We have a wonderful police chief. Of course, our community-involved policing has been very, very much a part of our progressive movement in Richmond. The police chief, along with myself and the vice mayor, were standing there in that line. He held the sign, you know, Black Lives Matter. Our vice mayor held our hands up, you know, don't shoot. Uh-huh. So we were very proud to stand with our community and to say, hey, Richmond is doing something different, doing things differently. Chief Chris Magnus also was called to Ferguson to kind of give advice on how relationships with the community should be done, rather than the kind of actions that we that ended in such tragedy that we've seen in Ferguson and other places. So, yeah, our police department is another example, and we know we have to keep on top of everything. We don't want any shifting back to the old culture. We want a new culture of police standing for community and the rights of community, and not, being this kind of when someone is unarmed and, you know, at the drop of a pin, having their like a hair trigger happen. So we don't like that. We put resolutions forward to make sure our police understand that, and they do.
Well, Gail McLaughlin, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and we wish you continued success, and keep in touch, and anything that we can do or promote or help with, just let us know.
Thank you, Cindy. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to continuing to work together.
Okay, hope to see you soon somewhere around.
Okay.
Okay. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's Cindy. Cindy Sheehan Soapbox for today. I hope, as always, you were informed and inspired to go further. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller, Councilwoman, Council Member Gail McLaughlin for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox and for all her great work and really her inspiring, dedicated work. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting the show. Go to springrising.org. Spring Rising is rising up on us very quickly, and we have a lot of exciting things planned there, out there in washed up DC for the anniversary of Shock and Awe. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.